Hello and welcome to this Innovation Forum podcast. At our recent Future of Food US conference, we kicked proceedings off with a Q&A session with Dave McLennan, CEO of Cargill. He spoke to Innovation Forum's Toby Webb about evolving sustainable business, supply chain challenges, and the impacts of the coronavirus pandemic on maintaining supply in challenging circumstances.
Let me start out by asking you a bit about your own personal history with Cargill. Just interested to know how your career has evolved, how you also feel sustainability has evolved in the company. So perhaps give us a bit of a story of that journey.
I've been with Cargill for 29 years, and I started out in the financial business in the early 90s, 1991 to be precise. And I have seen a big part of the company. I've been involved in our protein business. I was involved in our food ingredients business, the business that makes cocoa and chocolate, also makes edible oils, as well as starches and sweeteners, and also bioindustrial products. I was our chief financial officer in 2008 for several years before becoming chief operating officer and then chief executive officer, which I'm in my seventh year in that role. If I think about the way Cargill has changed since when I joined in 1991, and obviously statistically it's changed, meaning we have doubled our number of employees, we're in over 70 countries, become much more involved in food ingredients, our business portfolio there has grown. At our heart, we're still an agricultural company, but certainly we were more focused on agriculture. We had a bigger part of our portfolio or of our business activity when I joined in 91 in agriculture, as opposed to today where we're bigger in protein, we're bigger in food ingredients, and we're also very significant in animal nutrition. But my final point, Toby, would be that the focus on sustainability, if you think about 1991, I mean, it's decades ago, obviously. But was it non-existent? No, but it's certainly compared to today. But I did not imagine, and I don't think anyone could have imagined, when I became CEO almost 7 years ago, how the focus on sustainability would become so prominent in agriculture, in food production, and food ingredients. And so it's certainly something that I dedicate a significant amount of my time to, and something that has evolved very significantly, not only in my time as CEO, but dramatically since I joined the company almost 30 years ago.
Perhaps you could tell us a bit about the journey so far. And Cargill's been through a transformation on sustainability objectives, as many other companies have been for the last 10 years or so. Give us your own sense of what the key milestones have been, and then let's talk a bit about where you want the company to go.
Key milestones have come fast and furious in the last several years in particular. We named our first chief sustainability officer just about a year ago. We made sustainability an explicit part of our statement of purpose: to nourish the world in a safe, responsible, and sustainable way is our statement of purpose that we use with all our employees, we share with our customers. But this was probably 4 years ago when we said safety, cultural and social responsibility, but environmental sustainability are core to our purpose, and we want to call it out. So I think that was a cultural milestone for us. Developing our supply chains, focusing on transparency, sustainability, the use of technology. We've had incredible progress, and we've been recognized by many of our customers for just that. But I'd say the pace of change relative to environmental sustainability, our focus on it, but perhaps as importantly, if not more importantly, our customers' focus on that and the world's focus on it has developed rapidly in the past several years. We've changed along with it, and so we still have a ways to go. We're still, improving and building our sustainability efforts, but we've made a lot of progress in the last several years.
And in terms of where you want to go next, particularly towards 2030, I guess there's a couple of responses you must be thinking about. One, I guess, is COVID-19 and what that's doing to the business and the markets right now. And then you've got your longer term sustainability strategy. Let's talk about COVID, first of all. I mean, it is the thing that dominates the world, and I'm sure it dominates many of your thoughts. Tell us a bit about what the company is doing around that on the supply chain resilience side of things. We can all assume you're doing a huge amount for your employees, but if we could talk about the supply chain element of it, that would be really interesting.
Yeah, I think one of the lessons from this, or one of the things that has been reinforced, is that the world's food supply chain system is resilient. And when it first started to unfold, and we had an early perspective because we have a significant business in China, and we started shutting our plants and activities down in China in the middle of January. At the time, I don't think anybody knew that it would become a pandemic, but certainly we had early warning signs that we had to be prepared and early indications about what does it mean to move quickly. But at the same time, what do you need to do to make sure food continues to be produced, that farmers and communities are supported throughout the crisis in terms of financial support as well as commercial support, continuing to provide a market for their products? And as it evolved and spread into other countries in Asia and then obviously in other parts of the world through February, March, and through today, there were certainly concerns and questions about how do we keep operating? How do we make sure that supply chains continue to function? How can we make sure that the crops get out of the fields to markets, to ports and facilities? I mean, there's so many points. And I think one of the benefits, to use that word thoughtfully, one of the benefits of the transparency or the appreciation for the food supply chain and the food system during the COVID crisis is I think people have a better appreciation of where their food comes from, how it's produced, and the many people and the many steps that are involved in the supply chain. So long term, I think it's a good thing. You asked Toby about sustainability. You could certainly look back on the early days of the crisis and say, okay, it was more about how do we make sure that the food supply chain and the systems around it continue to operate safely, responsibly. But we've got to make sure the food is getting to where it's needed. We need to make sure people are being fed. But as this becomes a new way of life or more of a routine way of life, it's clearer to me that with the appreciation and insights into how food is produced, sustainability and environmental sustainability around the production of food, there's going to be more focus, there's going to be more interest, and there's going to be higher expectations. So I think it's a good thing that if anything can be said to be good that's come out of COVID, there are things, and I think this is one of them.
Do you think there will be a change in the way companies, your customers, perhaps yourselves, look at sourcing and resilience as a result of COVID-19? I'm sure you've read, Dave, there's a lot of media commentary and expert commentary at the moment saying we're going to see more localized supply chains, we're going to see more resilience planning, things may be slower, but they'll be more stable. And that has huge implications. Is it too early to say what COVID-19 will do for your supply chains and those of your customers?
It's an important and excellent question. And so while it may be too early to say, it's not too early to speculate. I have taken the time and I've spent a lot of time in the last, I guess we're going into our third month, to speak to our customers and to the other CEOs from our major customers, you know, one, to make sure that we were serving them in the way they needed to be served. And two, to get up to ask the same question that you did. How do you think the world looks post-COVID or as this settles into being a new expectation or a new reality of the world and of the food supply chain? And my takeaway is what I just alluded to a few minutes ago. It does change, but it changes it for the better. And I think it increases the focus on sustainability, transparency, and really reliability. And so I think one of the things that has come through the clearest is our customers want sustainability of the supply chains, but they also want the reliability of the people in the supply chains. Whereas I think that local agricultural production and people are going to be more conscious about where their food comes from and will continue to support local agricultural production. The fact of the matter is large communities, cities, regions can't support themselves, can't feed all their population on local production alone. Everybody on this call, I'm sure, has talked about, you know, comparative advantage. And, you know, where do you best grow? Where is climate and soil best suited to produce grains, agricultural products, fruits, vegetables? But ultimately, the success of the supply chain, the success of the food system does depend on transportation of products and on open borders for trade. Ultimately, going back to what you said, Toby, it's too early to say. And we could see a trend towards nationalism in all forms, not only food production, but trade, and an inward-looking focus for the next generation. As it relates to food, we still believe that trade needs to occur and that food needs to move across borders in order to give people access to nutrition and plentiful food supplies.
And would you say that traceability, which is such a big shift for companies in food supply chains, is traceability set to change the business model of your company, or is that too kind of grandiose a statement to make?
Yes, is the answer, which is I think that's at the core of sustainability and at the core of change in the food supply system is traceability and transparency. One of the key things that we have been focusing on is the use of technology, and we've partnered with tech companies, with NGOs, with our own tech and data development, which is the demand for information from consumers and from our customers, food manufacturers, about where did the food come from, how was it produced, what ingredients are here, and you know, all rolling into labeling and trusting in brands is going to increase and become much more prominent. And I think the only way to do that is through technology. You've got to have the ability to do it quickly. You've got to have the ability to do it comprehensively. And we're already seeing examples of this. So if I could talk for just a minute about our cocoa supply chain and one of the key issues in West Africa, the use of child labor in production of cocoa in West Africa. So I was in Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire in late 2019. And I hadn't been there for a few years, but I went to our co-op customers, I went to our facilities, and I saw how far technology has advanced in terms of our ability to trace back to what is literally tens of thousands of cocoa farmers, small and medium-sized smallholder farmers. You have to have technology to be able to trace where did the beans come from, what regions did they come from, and where are sustainable farming practices being employed, not only in terms of have we educated those farmers to be able to produce and have higher yields to increase their own livelihoods and well-being through sustainable farming practices, but also the use of child labor. So one of the things that I saw firsthand was we have all of our co-ops have their farmer, their member farmers complete a survey, which asks them obviously their location, how long have they been in farming, what training classes have they included, and also the number of male members between the ages of 7 and 19 living in their household. And it collects all the data, and then we run an algorithm on the data based on region, based on the answers of family demographics, length of time in farming, use of training, where is the likelihood of abuse of either child labor practices or non-sustainable farming practices? Where is it most likely? Where is it most prevalent that allows us to focus in on those farms and those co-ops where that might be the case? That was not possible as recently as 3 or 4 years ago. So the use of technology to enhance traceability and transparency is a vital and necessary tool in continuing to make gains of sustainability in our supply chains.
I wanted to ask you also, Dave, about the role of trust here. Everything's gone a bit wobbly, hasn't it, the last few months in the world, to put it as an understatement. Increasingly, if you look at the Edelman Trust Barometer and some of these surveys, people are turning to the names they know, communities, the brands they trust. I wonder, how do you as a CEO look at the issues in front of you now with COVID, the long-term supply chain resilience challenges we have with sustainability? How do you think about how you can take an opportunity here to enhance brand trust and to enhance trust in your business?
It is at the core, as you said, Toby, it's at the core of what's happening in the world today. And there's so much fear, and understandably so, and the loss of trust in governments and governmental agencies and people not understanding who they can trust or what information they can trust. I heard somebody say, never before have so many well-informed and well-intentioned and well-educated people have had so many divergent views about what's happening, not only just in terms of the pandemic, but also in terms of the societal implications of what is changing and what is going to change. And that's why I think that if you live by your values, and if you have a value-based culture, which Cargill has and has had for 155 years, that the trust is there, your culture is strong, your relationship with your employees, with your farmer and rancher customers, with your food ingredients and retail and food service customers, this is where it comes into play. So it's not something that you can create just because COVID has shown up. It's something that has to have been there and that you have to continue to reinforce through transparency, frequent communication. It's one of the reasons that I've been in such active contact with the CEOs of our customer companies. I have been to our facilities where we're manufacturing food to show support for our employees and to let them know that we respect them and we care for their safety. And one of our values is put people first. And another one of our stated core values is do the right thing. And I found through this COVID outbreak that if you use your value system and use that as a filter for your decisions, whether it be on sustainability or keeping your supply chains running or keeping your employees safe, if you use your value system to make those decisions, the decisions become very easy. I think there has been a loss of trust, but I believe, and I'm obviously biased, I'm in the private sector. I think many organizations have stepped up and have reinforced the notion of trust and reinforced their values and reinforced the history. And you also alluded to the fact that people are going back to brands that they trust, whether it be canned soups or other ingredient products that they may have known, that older people may have known when they were younger. Trust ultimately is going to be the key to your business success, to your success in sustainability, to your success with your employees, and to the building the relationships with your farmers, your customers, and with the world's communities. And that will never change, but it's certainly being brought to the forefront given what's happening.
And I guess one element of trust is working in partnership with others. We have a question here from the audience about collaboration, and they're asking if you could share a bit more about the roles of some of the different partners you work with, because it's not just one organization that can solve any of these problems, as we know, and it's about that coalition of partners. And I wondered if you could share a bit more about some of those that you're working with on your sustainability journey.
We have several really important and vital partnerships, and we approach this from the standpoint of we cannot do this by ourselves. We don't have all the answers. We've made tremendous progress in our sustainability goals and our sustainability focus over the last few years, but we've done it with a lot of help and support. We formed our Forest Protection Advisory Council, which brought in several NGOs, several representatives of farming communities to say, we need to understand, how do we look to the world? What does it look like from the outside? Give us your advice. Give us your counsel. We've published all of the minutes of those meetings. We have another meeting coming up in the next couple of weeks. We publish the meetings online, and it goes back to your question about building trust and transparency. We put them on our website so people know, here's what we're talking about and here's the direction that we're heading. We've got numerous partnerships around the world, whether it be with the Nature Conservancy or WRI or TNC, or Heifer International, or with Hatching Hope. I was in Mexico last summer as part of our partnership with Hatching Hope and helping female partners in Mexico to become poultry farmers. And it's inspiring, but it's also a reminder, we have to have local and national and worldwide partnerships in order to get the best ideas, in order to be able to implement our own beliefs and our own sustainability goals and approaches. Your goals are our goals. And when I say your, I mean people in the audience, whether they be NGOs or whether it be our customers or whether it be our farmers, we are all pulling in the same direction. The means by which we get there and the tactics we employ are going to differ, but we can work together in partnership to figure out what are the ones that are most effective, what are the ones that are going to solve the issues quickly, and what are the ones that are going to continue to build trust in the food supply system.
Time for a couple more before we finish.
Sure.
One audience here about animal agriculture and COVID-19. Slaughterhouses, meat plants have been very much in the news. And animal agriculture, of course, was in the news a lot before COVID-19, what with Brazil and beef. Animal agriculture has been getting a bad name, I think it's fair to say, in some circles, antibiotic use and so on. But I know that those criticisms don't tell the full story, of course. Huge progress has been made on sustainability in animal agriculture. What do you think the lasting impact of COVID-19 will be on animal agriculture? Do you see it as a step change?
That's a great question. So I'll go back to one of your previous questions, and one of my previous answers was, it's too early to say, but it's certainly not too early to speculate or to think and talk about it. As you said, Toby, the production of meat, of animal protein, animal agriculture has been in the press a lot lately, and for many reasons, but most lately because of disease outbreak and because of production facilities, which have literally thousands of employees that work there, and have been subject and have been infected by COVID-19. The stories that you don't see and that I've seen for myself is that the intense pride that the frontline workers take in making food for their countries and in recognizing that animal protein is a form of nutrition. It is a form of nutrition that people choose and people want to consume. And that being said, there are certainly more forms of protein that are coming into prominence and that are coming into production that are getting a higher profile because of what's happened. So there have been many stories about plant-based protein, and we are very involved in plant-based protein. We have our own plant-based products that are on retail shelves. We make pea protein, which are ingredients for some of the very well-known plant protein-based companies. For example, Beyond Meat uses our pea protein. And so we believe that consumers have and want a choice, but certainly with shortages that have occurred on shelves, because particularly in the United States and North America, where protein plants have had to close down, everything from poultry to pork to beef, it has drawn attention to and provided an opportunity for plant-based products to get onto consumers' tables, giving consumers a choice. People that don't want to consume animal products, that want to have products that are made purely plant-based proteins, is something that they should have, which is why we're also providing that as a choice. I think it will likely accelerate the use and the consumption of plant-based products, Toby, as a result of the fact that, you know, number one, it's been, you know, the stories have been in the press, but also number two is in some cases there have been spot shortages on grocery shelves of traditionally produced animal protein.
There's been an interesting piece this week on the Genetic Literacy podcast about how some of the plant-based proteins products have less nutritional value or more damage possibly with sodium than some of the animal ones. So obviously, there's a huge spectrum of issues there to take into account, and we don't have time to debate them here. I have time for one more quick question for you, Dave. When you look towards 2030 and the targets that Cargill has, what role do you see for the notion of regenerative agriculture? It's come up the corporate agenda hugely in the last few years. Suddenly, it's the centerpiece of many corporate strategies. Where does it sit with you?
It's also an interesting evolution. And as I've been CEO, as I mentioned, for the last 7 years, and sustainability has taken on a more prominent role. For example, GMOs. In the early day, GMO agriculture and non-GMO-based choices was a very significant topic when I first started in my role. It's still a significant topic, but you know, the role of sustainability and sustainable agricultural production has become more prominent as, call it a rubric, relative to the specificity of non-GMO production or use of GMOs, which, I'll quote you, you could have an interesting debate on that topic as to whether GMOs are a tool for better sustainability or not. But again, it's individual choice. You know, relative to regenerative ag, it is something that is emerging, and several of our customers in my conversations with them have spoken about they want to focus more on that as a tool, as a focus. And so it's something that we are still certainly learning a lot about, but I think it's something that is going to rise in prominence. Healthy soil, we have a program that we just developed in Iowa in terms of creating healthier soil, using soil as a carbon locker, as a carbon sink, as a way to help reduce greenhouse gas emission. And so we have already begun our own programs on regenerative agriculture and creating healthier soil for farmers. If our farmers and ranchers around the world are successful, we're successful. If they're practicing regenerative and more sustainable farming practices, if they're better educated on how they can use less water, less soil, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, the world's going to be a better place. And that is where we are spending a lot of our time and a lot of our focus. So that particular topic, Toby, is one that is emerging in prominence and something that we are already involved in.